Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Matthews-Burwell spent much of the weekend trying to rally support among governors for the administration's efforts to cope with a surge of migrants coming across the Southwest border. Now, Burwell flew down to Nashville. That's where both Republican and Democratic state leaders are attending the National Governors Association meeting. Meanwhile, the Justice Department has issued regulations to name at least 15 temporary immigration judges. That will help the overloaded courts a smidgen. We get a firsthand look at the immigration court system from Judge Dana Lee Marks. She's president of the National Association of Immigration Judges. She likens her job to deciding death penalty cases with traffic court resources.
It surprises people to realize that we don't have bailiffs in most of our courtrooms. We don't necessarily have a clerk there to help us. We don't have the kinds of transcribers that most courts have. We're a very low-budget operation. And the reason we also compare our operations to traffic court is that it's a very high level of, high volume, of proceedings that we conduct in our courts. That said, we are a hybrid kind of court where even though these are technically civil proceedings, obviously the stakes for the people that come before us, whether they be asylum seekers or people who've been lawful residents for years who then have a problem in their status and are brought before our courts to see if they qualify for some kind of waiver or benefit under the immigration law, those stakes for the individuals who come before us are very, very high.
So that's just the status quo.
Yes. The immigration judges have been the canaries in the coal mines for years trying to say that we don't have enough resources. And this new surge is just exacerbating the situation to the crisis point.
So in this surge, if there are, nobody knows for sure, say 50,000 unaccompanied minors, under the law, is each one entitled to an individual hearing?
It's difficult to say whether that is going to occur or not because there are different ways that the Department of Homeland Security can handle these cases. The first thing that happens when a minor is encountered at the border is that they determine whether they're from a contiguous country, whether they're from either Canada or Mexico, where different rules apply and we can negotiate with their governments and they can be returned relatively quickly. If the children come from any other country besides Canada or Mexico, the Department of Homeland Security is required to have the Health and Human Services Office of Refugee Resettlement take control of those children within 72 hours to assure that they are physically safe and appropriately housed. It's a separate proceeding from and a separate agency involved from the Department of Homeland Security's Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Border Patrol divisions, which make the determination of whether or not this is the kind of case that they are going to issue a charging document in. And it's only when a charging document is issued to the alleging that the person is here without proper documentation, and only when that is filed with the courts, do the immigration courts then come into play.
So that makes HHS the gatekeeper here, in effect.
They are the guardian of the person. They safeguard the health and safety of those children. As to what their legal status is, it's completely independent. It's with the DHS enforcement arms. And one of the things that happens is that DHS can decide where to file the charging document. They can file it at the border, but if it looks like that a child has family members who are going to be able to be responsible for them and it's likely that they will be released to a family member living in another state, it doesn't make sense to file that charging document immediately at the border and start the immigration court proceedings, because what's going to happen is that most individuals will then ask for a change of venue, a transfer of location for their hearing, and it just creates extra paperwork. So one suggestion that has been made is that the DHS wait a bit to allow the Office of Refugee Resettlement to identify where these children are going to be housed in the more long term in order to have the immigration hearings take place at those locations. And so there can be some delay before that document comes to the immigration courts. That change of venue possibility also explains why every immigration court in the United States is potentially impacted by this surge. Initially, it's the border courts that may be getting a larger volume, but many of those cases will end up having changes of venue filed, which means the case will eventually be transferred to a court where the child is living more permanently. And that means that even here in San Francisco, for example, I could be hearing many of these cases which were initially encountered by the DHS at the border.
I think a lot of people, when they hear that, especially an agency like HHS, Health and Human Services, is the guardian of these children, if you were, they don't necessarily believe that they are ever, these kids are ever going to appear in immigration court because they could go off someplace in the United States and just fail to show up. Are you actually seeing more cases, particularly of children, now because of what's happening on the border?
It's just beginning to trickle down to courts like San Francisco, where I am. And it's hard. The Immigration Judges Association doesn't keep the statistical records and doesn't have access to the statistics that the Department of Justice would have as to whether or not these children have any higher rate of non-appearance than anyone else.
And in general, how often or how long are people in the country before they get their day in court?
Well, that is the problem with adding this surge onto an already overburdened and overwhelmed system. It varies in every court across the country. So I can use the example of my own caseload in San Francisco, because that's what I'm most familiar with. It often takes close to a year if someone is not detained, because that's different if they're detained. But if someone is not detained, then it can take a year or more for them to have their first arraignment type hearing, which we call a master calendar, where we simply look at what kind of case it is and try to figure out, are there any preliminary steps that need to be taken? Does this person have a lawyer to represent them? Do they understand what their rights and responsibilities are in these proceedings? It can take almost a year or more for those cases to come to my court. And if someone were to walk in that day at their first hearing and say, I've got a lawyer, I've got my application for asylum, I am ready today, their case could take as long as 4 more years before I'm able to put it on an individual hearing slot where I can devote the 2, 3, 4, 5 hours that are needed in order to assess the evidence in that particular case. So I'm currently setting merits hearings in the spring of 2018, and I am not alone among my colleagues. Some courts are even farther out in their dockets, while some are closer in.
So let me just pick my jaw up off the floor here and put it back on for the next question then. So what does that mean in a practical sense for 50,000 people? Some of them are children, some of them are gang members.
Right. Let me go back one more step and say to also give you another view of looking at this to help put it in perspective. According to Director Osuna's testimony before the Senate Oversight Committee hearing yesterday, there's more than 375,000 pending cases before immigration judges across the country. And the immigration judge corps consists of 243 immigration judges. Only about 228 of those judges are full-time judges in the field. Approximately 15 are management and supervisory judges who have either no pending caseload or a dramatically reduced caseload. Going back to your question, because I haven't forgotten it, what is ironic and painful in these situations is that the delays often harm strong cases, good cases that would otherwise be granted. Certain people lose track of witnesses that they need to present in court. Other people have a need for a qualifying relative. That relative can die. Some kinds of benefits under the immigration law are dependent on whether you have a child who's underage, and just because the case takes so long, that child can become an adult. So those cases suffer. It is true that the weaker cases that are less likely to be granted anyway, they may benefit from having the delay because they are allowed to remain in the United States while they're waiting for their hearing. So the absolute opposite result of what we would want is occurring because of the fact that there simply aren't enough immigration judges to put these cases on calendars promptly and hear them.
We're speaking with Judge Dana Lee Marks, president of the National Association of Immigration Judges. She is also an immigration judge herself in San Francisco. And while this is clearly a very long-term process, the ramifications of today's surge are going to be felt long into the future. What, if anything, are the courts doing now to help process all of these cases? What sort of changes are you making? What sort of changes are you told to expect in the near future?
Well, there is a protocol in place for when there is a mass migration surge. What that means is that judges from courts away from the impacted area, so now courts away from the border, those judges will be selected to travel to the border and hold hearings. You have to have an available courtroom or televideo equipment. Televideo is not an appropriate method for hearing some of these cases, particularly if you were to have an unrepresented minor. I'm very doubtful that that would be used. But there are certain courtrooms that are set up with televideo capability, which would allow, if you have a represented adult in a proceeding, allow a judge from another location to be able to handle those hearings by televideo. It's my understanding that every courtroom that currently exists on the southwest border has a judge, either a local judge or a judge that has come from another location, conducting hearings in order to address the problem. But we definitely need Congress to respond to the president's request in order to hire more judges so that the caseloads left behind are not dramatically harmed by additional delays, and to set up the infrastructure that's needed, because you need courtrooms to hear these cases in, and the equipment, computer equipment for the digital audio recording of the record, televideo machinery, if that is appropriate for example, some of these master calendar or arraignment type hearings, just to try to figure out, does this person have a lawyer, are they ready to go? Those kinds of things can be handled pretty expeditiously through televideo as well. And so resources are needed in order to create more capacity for hearings to be held closer to the southwest border at this point.